I'm here with Dick Lurie. And Dick Lurie is doing what he's been doing he moved to Cleveland Heights in 1925. He's playing the guitar. And Dick Lurie, of the people that I've met in Cleveland through my years, is probably one of the most interesting personalities, who has a lot to give. And so here's my interview I did with Dick Lurie. Hello, Dick Lurie. When did you start playing the guitar?
When did I start music? And I started to play the piano when I was around 5. By the way, speaking of music, and you and I have spoken of that many times, when I was a kid, I was, say, a year old. My mother told me much later that I would never fall asleep unless there was some noise going on, like if she would be playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would fall asleep. Well, she couldn't play the piano all day, so she found out I would also fall asleep if she turned on the vacuum cleaner. Left the vacuum cleaner on.
You are a legendary figure in the largest sense of the word, and in the history of the Cleveland music scene. And this is a very simple question, but you started to play the guitar when? You're a guitar player and a guitar instructor.
Actually, I started music when I was 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
My mother gave piano lessons, and piano lessons, therefore, were inexpensive in my house.
Yes.
I started piano lessons with her. Then I didn't practice very much, so she changed me to her aunt,
mm-hmm.
and her aunt became my teacher, Aunt Sarah. I remember Aunt Sarah very well. Aunt Sarah also had a brother who was a nationally known concert pianist.
Mm-hmm.
When Aunt Sarah was about 18, she was sent to Vienna with her brother, Nathan, to Vienna, and there Nathan, or Uncle Nate, was to study with Lechetitsky, world-famous piano teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is your background. This is how you started.
Yeah.
Well, so you started off as a playing musician or a teacher, or which did you start off with?
I think I always wonder why some people become professional musicians, some become part-time sideline musicians, some become hobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually the ability of all three of those departments is equal.
Yeah, someone has more time to develop.
No. They have more desire.
Okay.
But I've known people in high school. I remember one fellow, Robert Sharp was his name.
Mm-hmm.
He was a solo cornet player. He was an all-A student. He may have been on the football team, and he became a prominent attorney. Now, I knew another fellow there who was a prominent violin player. He became a prominent French horn player. That was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up in the Cleveland Orchestra. Now, why did those two persons of equal ability...
Are you asking my opinion or my guess?
You okay. Can answer. Who knows? My opinion, I will give you my opinion, that some people like to show off.
Mm-hmm.
And others are more modest.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Sharp happened to be a very quiet, modest person.
For me, don't you think some people have sort of a, whatever they do this, there's almost a passion or something they almost have to release inside of them to... don't you think some musicians are like that?
I like to think it's a noble cause.
I would like to think that.
But I think, really...
We just like to show off.
I think it's a desire to show off. For instance, what sensible person would want to get in front of 2,000 people and play a precarious solo unless he loved to show off?
Mm-hmm. Unless he had that overriding passion that he wanted to.
He could stay home.
I keep trying to bring it up when he just wants to show off.
You're trying to excuse yourself.
I'm trying to. You know, I'm on trial here now.
Oh, no, we've been taught a show off. Don't be a show off. You know, like that's an obscene thing to be a show off.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the great show offs. MacArthur, Douglas MacArthur was a show off. There were all sorts of celebrated intellects. Einstein, I think, was an intellectual show-off.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I never knew him, nor observed him. But why else would he have his picture in the paper so often?
Well, he did a lot of things, but okay.
Sure. You know, I like to say things in a way. The only serious thing about what I say is to bring up subjects to think about.
Yeah.
How can I get you to think? When I give lessons, I ask a student a question. My feeling as a teacher is never ask the student a question you don't know the answer to. For instance, when you've asked a student, did you practice this week? You know when he played the first note, he did not practice. But maybe he didn't know it.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't realize they didn't do something unless you get them to think about it.
So you've been teaching and playing the guitar. When you were in your 70s, you were still playing out about 100 times a week, and you were also teaching
100 times a month.
100 times a
year.
Month. This is amazing.
I'm sorry.
100 times, you know, 100 times a week. You were truly an amazing 70-year-old.
I'll tell you
100 times a year.
Well, that's not so amazing, really.
Well,
we see, I am 80 now. And I love to be 80.
You like being 80.
And some people say, of course, considering the alternative.
So, besides that, you were up. Now, I'm a guitar teacher, and I teach 40. Sometimes I've done 50. Sometimes I've done 70. And I've done that for about 15 years. You were up to 120 at one time teaching the guitar?
When I was really into it, I used to teach 125 students a week. Then I used to play at two or three parties a week.
In your journeys, you have met many, many people. And you met Mel Bay. We all see Mel Bay guitar books. You met Mel Bay, right?
No, not only did I meet Mel Bay, which, of course, I had to initially meet him, I knew him very well.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see on my wall that I am a member of several things. Here is a member of the American Music Conference Special Music National Award. Mel Bay nominated me for that position.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture all over the place of things. Much of what I have succeeded in doing, I would say I owe to Mel Bay.
From just friendship with him or his influence?
He was a true friend. When I say a true friend, I'm not saying necessarily to me. I think he was a true friend to thousands, including hundreds of thousands of people he never saw.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he never saw them, they may have purchased his book or his books because he wrote many.
Well, he wrote many, but then after a while he did license those out, right?
He didn't license them. He hired people to write different sets
to represent what he felt was a good.
And now he has. I still am in contact with Bill Bay, his son.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Bay always says, "When are you going to write a book for us?"
Yeah.
And I have the book.
There it is.
All these are pages for that book. There are enough pages in that pile that you saw. They're probably about 150 to 200 pages to write many books.
We were talking before here about the you know, the difference between musicians today and when you were growing up and some of the heydays of even, I think, the 30s and the 40s, musicians were, well, a lot of musicians made their living playing music, and now it's become more of a hobby. And you felt that the union had something to do with that, that the change of the attitude, or I'm not sure exactly. You were kind of saying a lot of stuff about
it. That's my one of my favorite subjects, musicians' union. I believe that if we all work together, no matter what it is, whether as a country, a city, or a group of people in the common occupation, if we all work together, we can improve the working conditions for the workers, the living conditions for the people. We can improve the incomes. We can improve the level of professionality. Everything will be better if we work together. And a union is just what the word implies. Union. In union, there is strength. We work together.
Well, in the is your wife or was your wife the curator of the art museum?
She was for many years, then she retired.
Yeah. Wow, what a marriage. And I saw the pictures on the wall with you and your wife, and you seem like you've had a wonderful life together where you did a lot of traveling, and then you have the music together, or the music and the art. And your home is very quaint and seems very, there's something beautiful about the house, even on the outside, the simplicity of the house, I think. As we were talking earlier, you were telling me some of the neat things about your street.
You know, our street, right on Mount Road in Cleveland Heights, may not be the only street like it is, but I think it is a unique street regardless, and a street that is a pleasure to live on. When you walk down this street, I remember the first time a nephew of mine visited this house. He was a little boy of maybe 7 or 8. Bernard was his name. He drove down this street with his parents. He said, "This is the tree street." Mm-hmm. It's filled with trees. On our street, it's filled with musicians. My direct neighbor plays the string bass in the Cleveland Orchestra. Up the street, there's another man who is the solo French horn player with the Cleveland Orchestra. We have another man who's a potter. We have another man who is a city, when he looks at houses and says, "What's wrong with the house?" What do they call that?
Inspector.
Inspector. All sorts of people live on this street. Our street is made up of all species of people, black, white, red, green, blue, and yellow.
You also have your own newspaper on this street.
We have a street newspaper.
A street newspaper.
Sharon Chapman gathers information for the street newspaper and interviews people on the street, thinks of things to write about. She wrote a big article, The History of This Street. What else did she?
You also, you said you have the gourmet. You have your own little yes. 1 week. How does that work?
Well, because we have so many people of different country origins. Sharon organized a gourmet club. Like, coming up, we have a Mexican night. I think it's a week from this Saturday. Everybody is invited to come to the Mexican night at so-and-so's house. Bring your Mexican dish in. If you don't have a Mexican dish, she'll loan you a Mexican recipe cookbook. Make a Mexican dish. Bring it over. Bring enough for 10 to 15 people, etc., etc. We have Hungarian night, Chinese night, Italian night, Spanish night, Finnish night. All sorts of things go on this street. For a long time, we had a street picnic.
You have two rock and roll guitar players,
We have two rock and roll guitar players. We have a disc jockey from WCPN who lives on this street, who's a jazz enthusiast and very knowledgeable. I can't even begin. We have another man who's a famous researcher in science. Another lady who's a psychologist. I always wondered who this charming Japanese lady was. And I got talking to her the other day, more seriously. And I asked her, "What do you do for a living?" Because she gave out the essence of professionality. A professional person seems to act a certain way. And she said, "I'm a psychologist." And it turned out we knew a number of people in common. But it's amazing all the different types of people. We have another man at the end of the street who's an intensive nurse, a male, nurse at the Cleveland Clinic in intensive, what do they call it?
You know, I just had a concept. You know, maybe other streets have this richness, and some people just are bound in their own houses.
Well, of
course. Part of the charm is that you're getting together.
Well, we have.
And you're talking.
You know why? We have Sharon Chapman. It takes one spark plug, one spark to ignite the fire.
Yeah.
And, for instance, people speed down our street on the way to 7th Center, so we're organizing a group to inspire the city of Cleveland to put some sort of speed bumps in it or something to deter the speeders who come up as a shortcut from different parts of the city to get to 7th Center.
It's an amazing street.
It is an amazing street.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations with you. I don't know. I would say maybe 5 or maybe 10, 15 times we've got together and had these. And you're always a very colorful figure and had a lot of things that we've talked about. So I'm going to do something, word association, and I'll say a word and then you just tell me what you think. Jazz chords.
You know, the jazz chords are nothing new. They were using those so-called jazz chords 150, 200 years ago. Why is a chord a jazz chord? What does that mean?
I think technically what they're talking about is to take a major chord, add a seventh note, add a ninth or an 11th, and that's supposed to be a jazz chord.
Wagner did that.
Yeah.
150 years ago.
Okay. How about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, is a monument to who knows what will become.
Wow. The word educators as opposed to teachers.
That's a word I abominate. I always think the word educator describes those who don't like to teach but are involved in the teaching field.
Or the bureaucracy of it, or the administrator.
Could be. Teaching. The old-fashioned teacher who never had an MD, a PhD rather, a master's, maybe never got through high school himself, but the old-fashioned teacher, he may be a true teacher. The educator has many degrees. He bosses the teachers around and tells them how to teach.
Okay, rock and roll.
Years ago, I used to write rock and roll arrangements for some record company or other in New York, a big one. Can't even remember the name of it. Then rock and roll kept moving on, and I didn't. So that was the end of my career in that.
Country music.
I love country music.
Yeah.
First of all, did you ever listen to the words of... who's that fellow? The da 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 da. Hank Williams. Did
oh,
you
yeah.
read his
oh,
words?
Oh, yeah, I love Hank Williams.
Hank Williams's words are fantastic.
Yeah, I love Hank Williams.
Filled with sadness and tragedy.
Yeah.
And look at those melodies. Hey, good looking.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Yeah.
But country music is music of the people. Comes from their soul and heart.
How about Segovia?
Segovia was a wonderful and unusual man. I went to his school in Spain, which introduced us to Spain about 39 years ago. But I remember these little jewels with reflections on people and their way of thinking.
Besides being a musician and a guitar teacher that you've been and... you also are a travel agent. To say it right to me, yeah.
Technically, according to the state of Ohio, with whom I am licensed, I am a tour operator.
You are a tour operator. And you have done many trips to Spain, and you even studied a long time ago with Segovia, right?
Sure, but I don't consider myself as a tour operator.
You're a traveler. You love to travel.
We love to go to Spain. We organize these tours.
How many times have you been to Spain?
70.
Wow.
Now the 70th coming up in October. But anyway, we love to put these tours together. We like to think of the itinerary. The Spanish people in the Spanish government think I'm one of the knowledgeable people in the United States about Spain. We know more about Spain than most Spanish people.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I have Spanish friends who know more about the United States than I know.
Mm-hmm.
But we go to Spain because we love Spain and we really love
Is it other European countries or just specifically Spain?
Just Spain. We love the way the Spanish people think and act. People think and act differently in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, even in Cleveland, or in America, let's start with America, if you really pay attention to what people say and how they say it, you can say, I think you're from Georgia.
Yeah.
Or the way you sound and think, you sound like a Texan, etc.
Yeah, New Jersey or New York, yeah.
And we all do think differently than people do in other areas. Spain, they think differently than we do here.
And what do you do when you go there? You give a whole tour and you tell people you have a certain order of things that you do? And no?
No.
No, you don't do that.
We try to introduce them to Spain in such a way they will love Spain. The same way I do when I teach. After all, everything deals with humans.
Dick Lurie, you have some favorite peeves, and here's one of them.
You know, one of my favorite peeves, which is relevant to my field, is when people say, what do you do? And I say, I play the guitar. Well, are you a jazz guitarist, a classical guitarist, a country guitarist? I said, I don't know what you mean. I sort of do know what they mean, but I refuse to recognize it. I said, I am a guitar player, and I try to play things musically. And sometimes I play this type of music or that type, but I don't know what you mean, am I a country guitarist? I know country guitarists who are fantastic jazz players.
Yeah, the crossover.
Chet Atkins plays classical guitar.
Yeah.
So let's just call it, or what do you do? I'm a musician.
Yeah.
I was sitting across the table from three multimillionaires who had very important positions with the famous coal and steel company. And this was a very snooty banquet. They said to me, asked me, Mr. Lurie, what do you do for a living? I said, I am a guitar teacher. Well, we knew you played the guitar, but what do you do for a living?
Huh. Yeah, I know that
and
one.
And maybe that's the story of every musician's life.
I know that one. Jazz chord. A guitar chord.
Thank you for having me on the show.